Okay, we are going to start the weekly discussion in English media. We have about 1 hour or little more. We have assigned topic or sutta, Dvitanupassana sutta. Before going to the formal sutta, if anyone is having any on-the-spot questions or statement or any kind of thing, report, criticism, I would like to invite them first. Before starting the formal discussion. Otherwise, we are going to go to the Dvitanupassana Sutta. Kamal, can you hear me?
We have not received any reports for today's session, Bhante.
Okay, then we are going to go to the discussion directly on the Dvitanupassana Sutta. I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakhita to start the discussion with reading the relevant phrase.
So again, we're continuing with this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, which is at the end of the third great chapter, the 12th verse in the Sutta Nipada. And we're following the translation of Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi, but I will also refer to other translations. If bhikkhus, there are those who ask, could there be correct contemplation of the dyads in some other way? You should answer them thus, there could be, and how could there be? For one who is dependent, there is quaking. This is one contemplation. One who is independent does not quake. This is a second contemplation. When a bhikkhu dwells thus, the teacher further said this, one who is independent does not quake. One who is dependent clings to things, does not transcend samsara with its becoming thus, becoming otherwise. Having known this danger, there is great pearl in dependencies. Independent, without clinging, a bhikkhu should wander mindfully. So this word that we're focused on today is nisya. And this is variously translated here as dependence. A.K. Warder uses support, and Bhikkhu Sujato uses the word also dependency, and independent, and yeah, one who is dependent is not vulnerable. So this word nisya is actually incredibly important within the Sangha, because when we take ordination, we take dependence on our preceptor and on our acharya, on our teacher. So for the sake of the holy life, the ability, the skill to be able to take dependence, to find somebody that we can be dependent upon, is very important to the beginning of the holy life. For the first 5 years, we should take dependence on a monk. And if we have met the milestones of learning and training and so forth, only after that dependency period should we consider moving to a more independent state. And so who we take dependence upon is also rather critical to our spiritual life. And there are many false prophets in the world, and if we take dependence on a false prophet, then we will be led astray. And I was thinking about this last night, that in a way, you know, the father of the Sangha is, of course, the Buddha. And so the first disciples of the Buddha obviously took dependence upon the Buddha. And when the Buddha passed away, he did not appoint a successor in an individual, but rather the Sangha itself. So any subsequent members or people to join the Sangha are taking dependence upon that lineage. And it's interesting to notice, you know, when, you know, some cult or some group is set up, then in a way the disciples are forced to take dependence upon the guru, whereas within Buddhism we always have this pole star of the teaching and the training going back to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. and that this is what we take a kind of an ultimate dependence upon, and we verify that truth through our practice, through the self-realization of the practice. And so there we start to encounter other dependences, other nisya. So in fact, the whole of this sutta itself is a discussion about dependent origination itself. And so this teaching of dependent origination is considered, I think, one of the most profound and comprehensive of the teachings within the core of the Buddhist canon. So between the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Noble Path, and dependent origination, we really hit all of the big teachings of the Buddha, which he repeated again and again and again. So this phenomena of dependency is very vital. So we need we are dependent when we are born. We are dependent upon our mother and on our father. We're dependent on our clan and our family, and this is very important. And but to become independent, as the Buddha is suggesting, is a great path or journey for any mature spiritual traveler to take, to go from a state of dependency to independency. And the Buddha says that it is for one who is dependent or clinging, one does not transcend samsara. With its becoming thus, becoming otherwise. So this short phrase, becoming thus, becoming otherwise, is a direct reference to dependent origination itself. And there are many metaphors given in the suttas about this this need to cultivate independence itself. So when we cross the flood of suffering, when one becomes goes through stages of enlightenment, one doesn't carry the raft after one has crossed the flood. One puts down the raft and is independent of the raft. So in this way, like in this one metaphor, we can see that we are only fully freed from samsara when we become fully independent. And as a spiritual practitioner, I can definitely say that as I go along the path, I become more and more, in a way, independent of other people, meaning I am challenged by my dependency on other people, and I realize that relationality with other people is very important to my welfare and happiness. And there are relationalities within Buddhism as a Buddhist monk that we are in a way forced to take. For instance, we are dependent on our supporters and dependent on Pindapat, and this is essential. Whereas if I look at some other religious groups where they didn't have dependency on support, or they were independent, it wasn't in a functional way, and those groups died away over time because they were not seen as being interdependent or interbeing or interare with society itself. They were just sort of existing quietly in one corner of a realm or a kingdom or a country, and they came and they went. Whereas for the perpetuation of the sasana, a certain healthy dependency is required through the medium of Pindapat, for instance. And in return, the monks give teachings, and or they give just simply their example to a society as a way and a means out of suffering. And this interrelationship, this interbeing and interare, is a teaching that is very much emphasized by Thich Nhat Hanh and the Mahayana tradition. And it is, again, a very profound aspect of Buddhist teaching. You know, these days you can see there are very materialistic minded people who are very zero sum. And it's like, what it's all about me. And I'm independent, and I don't need, you know, I don't need to pay taxes because that's just a burden of the state, and that's a dependency that I don't wish to have. And they sort of don't see that they are actually dependent on their own kamma. So in one of the verses, which is one of the suttas, which is the discourse on the lion, we hear that when the devas, who are long-lived, beautiful, abounded in happiness, dwelling for a long time in lofty palaces, heard the Tathagata's teaching of the Dhamma, for the most part they were filled with fear, a sense of urgency and terror. It seemed that we are actually impermanent, though we thought ourselves permanent. So it's when we are faced with death that we start to quake, as it is put here in this verse itself. So one who is independent does not quake. So when people are faced with death and all of their wealth, all of their welfare and happiness is about to be destroyed, they quake, they fear. And if we understand also this dependency of going from lifetime to lifetime of samsara itself, then we should quake. We should be fearful of it with samvega, with spiritual fear. But we should also be, afraid that, if we haven't developed good kamma, that we will go from a good situation to a poor situation. And a situation that I always remember is of the parent of one of the very good modern monks. He was asked, you're so lucky, you have a son who is a famous monk and very bright and intelligent and capable and has done a lot. And he said, I will rely upon my own good kamma. I will rely upon my own good deeds. I'm not going to rely upon my son's good deeds. So in this way, kamma and kamma vatu, the cycle of kamma and the cycle of samsara, the cycle of kalisas, are all dependencies that we need to be conscious of and aware of. And if we're having a good innings in this life, well, there's the next life and the next life and the next life. So unless we're cultivating good kamma all the way along, then we will run out of good kamma. And even if we have good kamma, and as I've mentioned in the past, you can have great kamma, like the Buddha had great kamma and he still had incredible backaches, or the Mahamoggallana had great kamma, but he was still beaten to death as an arahant. There is this phenomena of dependency, of causation, of interconnectedness, interbeing, inter-are. The welfare, my welfare is also related to the welfare of others. I am not independent. So to become independent and free from these rounds of rebirth and free from suffering is to overcome a great and mighty force of nature. This is going to automatically arise, these dependencies. And death is no escape, because it will be followed by birth. And we cheer when people are born, but we don't realize that birth is the dependent condition for death and suffering within this very life. So if you are suffering now, you are suffering because you were born. Depending on birth, suffering. Depending on this life, death will follow. And depending on that death, rebirth will follow, unless we have found a way out of the suffering. And these are just natural, you can say, cause and effect relationalities. Because of this, that, or with this, with becoming thus, becoming otherwise, as the Buddha states in the verses here. So this is a very brief synopsis of the entire cycle of dependent origination. Becoming thus, becoming otherwise. Because of this, that. Because A arises, B arises. And because A ceases, B ceases. This is very frequently repeated by the Buddha, and is his shorthand way of talking about dependent origination itself. So dependency is very important. And again, on a more modern psychological sort of treatment of this word dependency, I mentioned earlier on in a previous sutta about addiction. We were talking about addiction or clinging, craving, and especially this craving, that when we are a craving, we are, you could say, addicted to, we can say addiction is another kind of word for craving. We are addicted to people, we are addicted to places, we are addicted to things, we're addicted to behaviors, we can be addicted to chemicals. There's all kinds of things that we can be addicted to. But without the dependent supporting factors, without that supply, so there is this relationship between addiction and co-addiction, or between the addict and the co-addict, or between the addict and the codependent. So this idea of codependency is very important. So sometimes when we have difficult relationships with difficult people, the question really has to come back, okay, why am I in relationship with difficult people? And it can be because of codependent factors, meaning maybe I'm a kind person and this not nice person is kind of predating on my kindness, but I want to be kind and I don't have boundaries and say no to this kind of predator type person who is not healthy for me. So they're addicted to what I have to give to them, but I'm also addicted to, in a way, giving to them. And, you know, you can see this relationship with, say, some alcoholic, within an alcoholic, say, families, where the addict is constantly seeking alcohol, and then all of their family members support that addiction in many, many ways. They are, you know, making excuses and trying their best to protect the addict. And so arises this kind of toxic relationship of dependencies between the addict and the co-addict, the addict and the codependence. So this phenomena of dependence is something we need to be very mindful of and notice how it arises in our mind so that we can have that awareness, that sati, and also panya, and have this right view and right attitude that ultimately the way out of suffering will involve becoming more and more independent, not more and more dependent, and that there are these dependent forces. So if there is, you know, bad people or bad situations in our life, sometimes it's because we gravitate towards bad people and bad situations, and we have these codependent factors happening in our life. So this is just some collection of thoughts around this phenomena of dependency, but I look forward to hearing from Mahatero on this.
So this was a situation personal to me. I was in Nisanavane. We are not worrying about dependence. Everything is there, we are independent, we don't worry. So it went very nicely, no problem. So when I go to Burma, Saido is thinking about cultural program for the Buddhist children in Burma, because government is not teaching Buddhism. Buddhist children, they do not know who is the Prince Siddhartha, who is Siddhodana, who is Mahamaya, they don't know. So Saido started the Buddhist culture program. Now it is, whole country accepted. Because people started using cannabis, drugs. Because they are not Buddhist. Even though we are called the golden land and all the kind of thing. So they are, I also used to help the Buddhist culture program for 1 month completely for 500 children. So at that time, the whole monastery is busy. 125 young girls and 125 young boys. We had to teach them how to wear the robes, how to Guan Pita Pati, because I consider it as a residential monk over there. So there the conflict started, or the difference started, mind your own business or mind others' business. So whenever you go to the mind other business, your dependence and independence is a sacrification, it's a relevant thing. Because otherwise we are better off with the four basic needs, four requisites. But when you go to the, consider about the others, political, social, economical situations are important. Usually it's a challenge for the abbot. Abbot must take care about the relationship with other monasteries and the well-being of the co-practitioners. So he has to take care about the four requisites. But as a beginner, you just take the refuge of the abbot and you are better off. That means you mind your own business. Be mindful. So the dependence, independence depends. What you depends is under your control or not. Do you know or do not know. As far as the karma is concerned, we don't know. Buddha knows. And we know there is something called karma, but it's not under control. Anything we happen, if we can't explain, we say it is due to karma. If we can explain, we say it is due to utu, ahara, whatever may be. So therefore, depends upon what? Living or in an unliving being or four requisites is about the social life. So the social life is the aim of the education. We are making citizens. Education is to make citizen utterly dependent, never become independent. That is a given fact. That's a conspiracy. That is called a hidden agenda. So we are making citizen. Citizen means he must have a city, he must have social life. He has no independence. He is no sovereignty. He is a part and parcel of the sovereign country, or part and parcel of the army, or part and parcel of the factory. So that is the worst thing human can do for others. But I can be volunteering to do some social work or whatever may be, keeping my independence, my sovereignty, my nibbana untouched. I can't ask anyone to tell, please take care about my nibbana. That is why the Sedaka Sutta, it says, Master says, while you are climbing upon the bamboo tree, bamboo pole, which is resting upon my shoulder, take care about my balance, I'll take care about your balance. But the disciple says, Master, please, take care about yourself, your balance, I will take care about my balance. So Buddha appreciates the second. So dependence, independence, every criterion, six detrimental trends, we have been secured by the bank and the health and the media and the government and everything, ultimately we are slaves. They never allow us to be mindful. They have no chance, no place for Nibbana. We are very good citizens. We are telling whatever they are interpreting. Not that our liberation, because these bloody fools, they are not aiming at the liberation. That is the crux. It's a racket. So you have to understand not to violate that. Let that bloody fools to have the constitutions and formulas and everything institutionalized. But they say soon after the child born, you must have vaccines till the death. Otherwise, we are not going to give a medical certificate. That is the way lobbying is happening. The Buddha says, go to the forest, be under a tree, and be in the empty house. Because these bloody fellows never think about the well-being of the person. They are talking about the organization. There is a sum total of individuals. When the sum total happens, always evil. Individuals are very pure. Sum total is adding something. So we have 32 parts. When the 32 parts come together, being happen. I happen. Myself happen. But if you separate individual parts, they are running independent. The hairs, body hair, they are running. They are self-sustainable. They are on the four elements. But when your being happens, we have to support it, jack, and maintain, uplift it. So society we have to understand from that perspective all these civilized definitions is for the community, it is for the agglomeration, it is for the unit. But when you are going to the individual, there is no unit. They are just energies. So energies do not need, they don't have any kind of a interbeing. They don't have margins. They don't have time and space limitations. So there were no need of the understanding or giving the liberation or giving the independence or dependence, not necessary. But whenever they collapse and ultimately a being happen or society happens, and that is the way the corruption starts. That's the way politics start. But what I'm telling is don't disturb them because they are bloody naughty. Without disturbing, you must have your independence. So therefore, you must have your preceptor. And in Burma, even the high ordination room itself says, please don't depend upon me. I am not depending upon you. You mind your own business because you are doing vipassana. Only the samatha candidates need dependence. Nisaya. Vipassana not. So majority of Burmese monks are not happy about the Suiji Nikaya Upasampada. But in the Sima it says, you are independent, you take care about Anicca Dukkha Anatma, don't look into me, I will take care about you, it is separate, but I am releasing you. So these things are very radical. So therefore, whatever we take as our refuge is our culprit. Money, or any social organization, or a person, or your security guard, they are the thing giving all the distractions. So we can't do without that because we are living in a civilized society. Even the Buddha was in the civilized society, but he mentioned not to get trapped, not to get into the racket of the so-called well-being, social well-being. It is utter nonsense. It's utter nonsense. You have to think about yourself. But take care not to violate them. They are omnipotent, omnipresent. They can kill you. Their regulations are, as such, they will never be killed by being killed by themselves. They have courts and they have police and they have the army. You can be victimized. Therefore, don't violate them. But mind your own business. Find your independence. It is sovereignty. It is self-sustained. And it is nothing to take from someone, from the omnipotent, omnipresent God. It is not someone's blessings. But we underestimate ourselves. All the time, I think, I have to learn, I have to do these things, and I have to get the permission from this and that. That always for the materialistic benefits. Not for your mindfulness. Not for your being here and now. So, being here and now, not depending upon any authority. You have nothing to ask from someone. So, you can have. And in then and there, momentary mindfulness, leave aside the momentary concentration. If you say it's as a birthright, what else you need? What else you need? So, that is why it says, nishitasa chalita. If you depend upon something, you are getting the vibration of that particular thing you are leaned against. If you are not leaning against something, no chalitam. Anishitasya chalitam natti. Whenever you are independent, there is no shocks. There is no quivering. Chalite asati agati gati nahyavati. When there is no movements, no going, no coming. And agati gati no hoti, chutupa pato no hoti, no birth, no rebirth. And that is the end of the suffering. So therefore, that indicates you are already no suffering, you are independent already, but society is asking, no, you have to have education, you have to have a license, you have to have a bank number, you have to have a car, all kind of thing. Otherwise, you are against the law. Question is it for your benefit? Is it for your well-being? Never. never for the well-being. It is well-being of the elite group. Though they are creating their own regulations. That we can't look beyond that. But lucky enough, the COVID is telling how poor they are. Their organization, their formulas, their methodology is less perishing. But the mindfulness never threatened. Your solitude, your be here and now, never cannot be changed. And that's the best answer for the COVID also. Your confidence. COVID also yet another disease. What is the difference? There is no special symptoms for COVID. So COVID also happened, the cancer also like that, and pneumonia also like that. And be aware, life means suffering. Lack of COVID means not lack of suffering. So therefore, organizations are the culprit. Therefore, be associate the organization knowing its malice and keeping your independence without sacrificing. Whenever you get some kind of a dependence, be aware. I am dependent upon that, not in unknown thing. So therefore, Buddha says, take me as a refuge. Take Buddha as a refuge. And Buddha, he knows he is not taxing you. Never. Take the Dhamma as the refuge. Dhamma will never tax you. All the other bloody fellows are taxing you. The tax is not for your benefit. I know very, very well, so therefore, I am not asking you to not to pay tax, that is not the issue. But I am telling, we are born in the civilized world, but our independence is completely a birthright. So we have to teach at as young as possible, even though you are a civilized being, even though you are maintained by the social etiquettes, don't think that is leading to Nibbana. Only your independence is your birthright, so your parents will not be happy when you become independent. Your teachers will not be happy, your government will not be happy. They will say, better darling to have a marriage, better darling to have a license, car license, and a degree, and all the kind of things. I mean, they are good, they are in compassion, but they don't know, therefore... Mind your own business is the phrase, and many civilized people say this is little harsh. It is little incompassionate. Appear like selfish, appear like personal. But they are the only people, don't harm others. All the other organizations are utterly depending on harm. Utterly depending on suck the energy, suck the nutrients, and they share, lion's share, take and thinking about the sharing other part of the human being, and therefore they are all demonic, they are all satanic, they are all Mara, but we can't live without Mara. So therefore, mind your own business is the shortened form, I would say, Nishitasya Chalisang, Anishitasya Chalisang Nati. So I am so glad and happy, Venerable Jnanananda, in his Nibbana sermons, he tried his best. Nibbana, the mind released. Lucky we have all the English books. And he gave a very, very, dynamic kind of interpretation. You are succumbed to have a dependence. Buddha says, after dependence only independence happens. So therefore, take dependence on the known thing, and that is not trapping you. You take dependence, which is dwindling off by itself. That is why we take the breath as the dependent, or pivotal point, or as the benchmark. But the breath is disappearing by itself. Take the walking up and down, left and the right, because it is ultimately become effortlessly happening. So then itself is dwindling it off. So exactly the Buddha. Exactly the Dhamma, exactly the Sangha. So therefore, please take note about the pivotal points Buddha referred for a meditator, Sila Samadhi Panya, or Sila Sikka Samadhi Sikka Panya Sikka. They are evolving things. They are not the hard and fast landmarks. and take the breath, take the left and the right, they take, you take it to replace the other gross things, but this is dwindling off by itself. So that part I am thanking. When Jnananda was giving, all the others are going to protect Buddhism. So you become a protector rather than release, you emancipator. Buddhism is not to, you have to nothing to protect Buddhism. When you are practicing, Buddhism is, or whatever it may be, it will protect by itself. But today, killing each other, Nibbanic terrorists, killing each other, telling you are destroying Buddhism, we are going to destroy you. That will never happen if you are minding your own business. So, last government, one before the last government, present government. The patriotic fallacies is giving a very classic interpretation how people are being misused by patriotism, by selling Buddhism. Things are happening. Corona is happening. As he mentioned, even the Buddha is having all the merits, he has backache. Even the old Venerable Sariputta Moggallana is having all the miracles, but it's hacked to death or smashed to death. So this can happen. So therefore, don't think, even though you are meritorious, even you have karmic for this thing, they are not going to protect you. They are protecting you. They will happen in such a way, mindfulness is completely beyond that. So whenever you understand mindfulness, you are depending on mindfulness. Ultimately, you know unmindfulness also part and partial. So therefore, I safely would say, mindfulness is opening the doors for the wisdom, and therefore you are open yourself thinking that I am a fool, I am going to learn. So I keep the mindfulness open, not the present moment my wisdom is leading me. It is limited, but wisdom yet to come is replaced this wisdom, and subtle thing will be replaced by the subtlest going on. That is what the Upanishad Sutta, please read it. It's very difficult to translate. It is, I checked it from the yesterday, I failed. But Channovada Sutta, the Buddha is ending up with this one. Don't depend upon someone. Be aware of the dependent things. Replace the depending things by known. Unknown dependence will be replaced by known. So omnipotent, omnipresent God is there as far as you don't know, as far as you can comprehend. So much so the God is there. So when the science came, that was threatened. But the way the Buddha is giving an example is the simple fact of breath, simple fact of left and the right, simple fact of verifiable fact of mindfulness, and don't extrapolate up to the Nibbana. Just see here and now, dependence and independence, safely you can say the mindfulness is a good pivotal point. That is my view.
So yeah, I'd again like to echo something that you've been talking about, which is this dependence to have on your object of meditation. And a very pivotal teaching I received from one of my teachers in Burma was that Tadamaran Sisiado, yes, this is Sayadaw Ukundala. He mentioned when asked the question, what is faith in Buddhism? And he said, it's your faith in your meditation object. And when we take faith in our meditation object, we bring the right effort and we bring the right mindfulness and the right concentration. And as a result, wisdom starts to arise. So then that wisdom feeds back and confirms our faith. And then it becomes a confirmed faith and confidence. So the nature of faith changes to the nature of confidence. And that's how we, you know, this is a kind of a healthy dependency to have within, again, within Buddhism. This is a skillful way and a means. And as it, like the title of the Visuddhimagga implies, that it's a path for purification. So we follow the light or the lie, the guidance of our meditation object itself, and the teachings become self-revealing. So this is how we free ourselves from other dependencies that are more toxic, by substituting healthy dependencies. We are secure from the toxic dependencies. So, like in my own case, like how do I prevent myself from boredom or a sense of loneliness or isolation and so forth? Well, I have my breath as a reliable something to depend on, that it can be depended upon, and it's healthy and it's reliable. And as we go further into this sutta, we will come into more lofty states, like the form and the formless states, where the nature of the breath becomes ever more refined, the nature of the mind becomes more and more refined. This is the fulfillment of this idea of Visuddhimagga, a path of purification. And it leads us ultimately to freedom from samsara itself and nibbana. So it's a way that is a middle path, that we don't follow the extremes of indulgence, because the problem with indulgence is, of course, craving and dependency, toxic dependency. And then on the other hand, we don't follow the path of extreme asceticism, which is just painful, and it is a kind of an addiction to pain and to suffering in itself. So we need to find that middle way between these extremes, and that's why it is a path of wisdom. It is not a path of brute force. It is not a path of fanaticism. It's not a path of extremes. So when we look at the extremes, left or right, or team blue or team red, when we look at the extremes in these different areas, we see that they kind of wrap around and touch each other. You know, the extreme left is very similar to the extreme right in behavior. And it's very difficult to take that dynamic path in between, the middle way. And we need to keep in mind healthy dependencies and unhealthy dependencies. And this is our way towards an ever increasingly independent state of mind, of existence, of being. And another concept that's similar or analogous to dependency is this concept of alio and analio. So alio and analio. And this idea is coming from the idea of roosting. So the clouds in the Himalaya, they roost on the mountains, you know. So the Himalaya or the Himalaya are the roosting places for clouds. And this idea of roosting, I notice it more and more in my life and in my friends, of where they get ingrained into their habits, and they become more and more difficult to you know, to grow or to change or to become more and more independent. Instead, they are cultivating various kinds of dependencies in their life. And it's interesting within the spiritual path that as we cultivate independence, we are cultivating a kind of ever new, ever green kind of mind, a childlike state of mind that where everything is curious and new. Whereas in the nesty kind of world, people don't go outside of their nest, and everything has to be the same every day, and my cup is in the same place, and my family must treat me in a similar way, and nobody rocks my boat in any way. So this is kind of a death in itself. And if you accept independence, you have to accept responsibility and duty and burdens. Like you must take care of yourself, or to the best of your ability, and you know, not be an obvious burden on other people, not be needy, and all of that takes effort and responsibility and maturity of mind. So this path out of dependency towards freedom and liberation is a challenging path. And that's why you don't often see this really in other teachings and ways where they cultivate dependency, they cultivate nesting, they cultivate sort of suffering it may be in its most subtle version, just as I mentioned earlier on with the devas in that discourse on the lions, that even though they lived in great privilege and great beauty and long life and so on, that it all comes to a crumbling to an end with the process of rebirth. So we can have healthy dependencies like our meditation object. We can have healthy dependencies like doing good, good karma and living a wholesome life. We can have a dependency on our good sila. So it's not all for loss. So when I develop dana, sila, and bhavana, I know I'm cultivating healthy dependencies, and I'm cultivating independence, and I'm moving towards the light. I'm moving in the right direction. So we're not wandering lost through samsara, but a bhikkhu is wandering mindfully. We are independent. We're without clinging, and we go from this step to that step, or from this life to that life. At least in a progressive manner, and we're not languishing or we're not going backwards. So I think that's a very uplifting message in what the Buddha has to teach. It is not a nihilistic, party now, that there is no future, nihilistic, materialistic kind of message, which is unfortunately what I see in the present time as becoming very strong. So maybe have you got
become strong what? In the present life, present moment, you observe what?
The increase of nihilism and materialism, that that we self-gratify ourselves now, and that by just gratification, self-gratification, and that we, by fulfilling our material dreams to the maximum, that we are, that's the purpose of this life. And they don't see that this is not freedom. This is actually a form of imprisonment, because we're imprisoning ourselves to dependency. And that this is intrinsically a nihilistic sort of mindset or belief, that there is no future, there is no past, there is no karma, there is no rebirth, there are no, constant wandering from lifetime to lifetime. So the devas in that discourse of the lion, they became aware, they quaked, they were fearful that their long and bountiful lives were going to come to an end. Whereas, I've seen it with very materialistic people. I found it common enough with, like, for instance, older Chinese men in Malaysia, where they were atheistic and they just really were totally materialistic and would vehemently deny that there was a rebirth or anything like that. And it was a very dark kind of a death. There was nothing joyful about it, because they saw the end of their life as the end of existence, that they were being annihilated by death. And their material, they couldn't bring their materiality with them, past death, and that they would feel very bitter about this. So this nihilism can be very dark as a kind of not a philosophy, but a way of life, where they're just constantly gratifying themselves, and then in the end, it's a kind of a bitter death on top of that, because they can't. They can't continue this self-gratification. They can't bring it past the grave, and then they are being annihilated by the death, because there is no future life. So that it's very dark. And then on the other hand, there they you would say, like, the more Christian view, that they're going on to heaven, and it doesn't matter, as long as you're on team Christian, you're going to heaven, or team Islam, team Muslim. It doesn't matter what you do. If you kill people and you commit suicide and you blow yourself up and you take out a thousandth of the enemy, then you're automatically going to rebirth and you're going to face all these beautiful virgin girls or whatever in your rebirth as a reward for your great sacrifice. And it's just like complete fantasy kind of stuff, you know. Being independent requires maturity and responsibility and all these kind of things that are very hard sells. You know, other religions don't sell that. It's not the idea. Like, it's like responsibility, day by day, you stay with the breath, mind your own business. No, they don't want to know any of that. That's all against the grain of dependency. So, you know, it's in a way, this is a unique, again, another unique aspect within Buddhism, this emphasis on dependency, this emphasis on dependent origination, and its profound nature and how well and detailed it is explained by the Buddha. You know, this isn't just some like airy-fairy spiritual remark. Oh, you know, be free from dependence, live independently, you know. He teaches it in extreme detail. The interdependent origination is broken out in so many ways, but at least 12 steps in detail, how they're linked, how they connect, and many, many suttas explaining each individual link. So it's not some sort of, I don't know, some sort of holy theory or vague notion. It's very clearly expounded by the Buddha. It's a very pivotal teaching within the whole doctrine of the Buddha. And well taught, and we must take it seriously, or we must be value it and take it very, very seriously and apply it in our life and see how it's manipulating everything within our life itself. It's a very profound force.
But I was interested in very recently, for the last 200 years, by the name of science, we killed all the ethical values and went for the verifiable things and then went for the materialistic. And that is the backward journey, 200 years. And that is basically use the tools like education and this factory work and the army work, so regimentation. So I am also a product of that. And recently I came to know it's a planned thing just to keep people slave to the education, to the social status, to the white-collar jobs, to the armies and the factories. But for me, for the last 30, 40 years, basically, the Buddhism is improving. The mindfulness, at least, maybe on the healing side, or maybe the therapeutic side, they find that is the only way. They're not the Christianity, not the theism, not the atheism, not the scientific. But meanwhile, these kind of things are happening. That is why we can talk in this technological age, take 1 hour about not dependence, independence, and the sovereignty. So therefore, earlier these terminology, these suttas, never taken for the discussion, never open to the Western mind, never open to the developed mind, or I mean educated mind. Now that is coming. So therefore, there is a kind of a wave. So I, as a born Buddhist in Sri Lanka, I got it, most of them, during the Western analysis, analytical mind. And they analyzed the science very profound and prolific than me. And they analyzed the Christianity very prolific and very the analytical way. And amazing. And then they come and say, both of them have their own weaknesses. Now the hidden Buddhism is coming. And of course it is politicized, it is economized, and it's become business Buddhism. But whenever you're going to see this therapeutic, more than preventative is better than therapy, still we can have the Buddhism for mind your own business. And now we can openly talk. Otherwise, the mindful school never be taken to the parliament or never be taken to the president, never be taken to the village monks. They comes to know the whole world is finding this old system is somewhat valuable. And still I have to walk very, very, just like tightrope walking. In the balancing, using the technology, using the science, scientific technology, and the Christian ideas of the God saving you, or mind your own business. So that balancing is happening nowadays. And so when Godwin was there, he put all these names, Analyo, Anishita, all the kind of names as monks' names, because they are the pet terms for him. But at that time, they were not prevalent. They are not happening in the society as such. But now there is a development. Now the terminology. Now sacrifice people for this kind of intrinsic or their own way of life, sacrificing for Dhamma. And Nishita, Anishita, Dvaitanupassana and Advaita Vedanta is a very crucial, very interesting point. I have no authority to talk and I have no knowledge. Dvaitanupassana is replaced by Advaita. Advaita is something, Nishita. They remove both the ends but grab hold the middle. The Buddha's thing is, even not you are grabbing hold, the middle also. So leaving aside the extremes, all accepted. Only thing is, in order to get rid of the extremes, if you take the middle, are you calling this Advaita? Are you call this as the Brahma? Are you call this as the liberation? How much the Buddha in Majjhe Sutra, Sutta Dhammini, the Nimanenibhima, the series is ending up with this, that, and he says, leave aside the both, don't hold into the middle. That also must be Anishita. So that part you can't explain in the linear language. You can't explain by any formula. You can't explain by scientific education. You can't explain by theism. It's a kind of your life experience. You have to understand, Nishita, we are replacing one by one with the subtle, more and subtle known things. Then the unknown, depending upon unknown thing, it's a hell. You are depending upon something like breath, something like walking with left and the right. And you are try to make the mindfulness as a material, materialize it. Try to be mindful. Of course, it's a mental aspect. But it's giving a complete openness. And leave aside the Nibbana, just see the then and there mindfulness. Definitely, it's a way opening, and that is happening. With this corona, with this unstable economy, with this warfaring warmongers, with this the news magnates, they are completely distorting the media. But even then, conscious Sami, they told that the term is conscious Sami. They understand the world is warming up and the pollution is happening, but keep the mind, your mind here and now unpolluted, and you are working against these bloody fools, conspiracists. Because you keep mind split second. Each and every thought moment is an answer to this corruption. Global warming and pollution and difficult, but even then it's possible. Now very, very young children, after practicing, I feel released. I don't know, after walking even 15 minutes, I feel released. So therefore that part also improving. These stick people are now fighting best to conquer Asia and Africa. Their whole mechanism is to the Asia and Africa, because West, they have nothing to do. And the nihilistic or atheist people, they are fighting best in America and the Western countries. But the Buddhism, not fighting, but evolving, it is devolving on Anishita, not depending on the science, not depending on the theism. Independence right from the beginning. So our discussion must be, are we aware of it? Are we to understand that dependence, anything is political? They have their own agenda. That independence, you may be vulnerable, you may be laissez-faire, you may be without any kind of thing, but doing no harm. So I think time up. So we are going to wind up the discussion. So therefore, try to be independent, but don't be naughty. Kamami kamitabbang. Kamami kamitabbang. Kamami kamitabbang.